From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. More than 300 million people across the globe don't see the world with what is considered normal color vision. Today we meet glass scientist Dr. Donald McPherson, who accidentally discovered he could help those people. He's the mind behind Enchroma glasses, designed to unlock color vision for those with color deficient sight. We also capture the moment when local illustrator and art educator Jonathan Scott Fuqua tries the glasses for the first time. It changed the way he was used to seeing the world.
When you're colorblind, it's almost an impossible situation to explain because color never stops my eye. I never go, wow, look at that color. It just doesn't happen that way for me.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. More than 15 million people in the U.S. and more than 300 million people worldwide don't see what's considered normal colors, commonly known as color blindness or color vision deficiency, color deficient sight. It's most often males who are affected, inheriting it from their mothers' fathers. The ramifications of color blindness reach wider than the occasional mismatched socks or questionable tie choice. Electricians, firefighters, and several vocations in the medical and aviation fields have color sight requirements for safety, making them off limits to those with color blindness. Later in the show, we'll meet a colorblind illustrator and art educator who allowed us to capture what it was like for him to see true color for the first time using a pair of special glasses. Joining us now is Dr. Donald McPherson, who invented those special glasses called Enchroma, which are designed to unlock color vision for those with color deficient sight. McPherson, a glass scientist, earned his PhD at Alfred University, a combination art and science institution in upstate New York. He's the recipient of grants from the National Eye Institute, the National Institutes of Health, and the National Cancer Institute. He's also authored 6 patents. Welcome to On the Record, Dr. McPherson.
Hi, Sheila.
For those of us who see what's considered normal color, how would you describe what a colorblind person sees?
The simplest way to explain it is that they have a reduced range of colors that they can perceive over certain parts of the spectrum. They're typically perfectly able to see anything that's along the blue-yellow color axis. So, for instance, blue and yellow objects and everything in between looks fine to them. What they have problems with is detecting the red signal or the green signal in an object. So, for instance, purple, which has a lot of red in it, will look the same as blue to them. And also, objects that have tonal qualities that range between green and red can sometimes just be entirely lost to them.
How is color blindness diagnosed?
There's a bunch of ways to do it. There's some very simple tests that require you to arrange a series of objects in the correct chromatic order. There's also testing that involves whether you can see a hidden symbol, sometimes a number, sometimes a letter. And if it's pediatric, it's just a shape like a triangle or a circle or an X in a background that's very confusing. So there are those sort of standard tests that can be done by eye care professionals. But also, it's typically identified at a very early age and the primary school level because children will, in art class, just draw things incorrectly. They'll make a tree purple or the grass red. So there's usually indicators at an early age without testing.
What is happening in the eye that makes a person colorblind or have color deficient sight?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with the wiring or the computer for a person who's color deficient. What I mean by that is their optical channels that transmit information from the eye to the brain are perfectly intact. Their mechanisms in the brain that process color information are also perfectly intact. And what they do have is one slight genetic variation that positions one of their 3 photoreceptors, what are commonly called cones. One of those cones is shifted so it overlaps the other one too much. So for instance, instead of having a normal blue, green, and red cone, they'll have a normal blue and a normal red, but the green one is shifted over and acts more like a red one than a green one. When the information gets processed, they don't see red, blue, and green as an input. They see red, orange, and blue.
When you say shifted, physically located too close together? Or...
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's just that their sensitivity to wavelengths of light is different than that of a normal person.
How did Enchroma glasses come about?
Well, I'm a glass scientist, and I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's a whole bunch of medical laser companies here. And I found out that they were wearing these what are effectively welder's goggles to perform surgery, and I thought that was kind of silly. So I set out to make a pair of glasses that would allow them to protect their eyes from the laser light while at the same time differentiate tissue. So I came up with a pair of glasses, and one of the side benefits of these, it turned out, is it helped people who are color deficient to see a wider range of colors. But it was just purely coincidental that this was brought to my attention.
What was the coincidence? How did you find out that the glasses were being used that way?
Well, it's a kind of a funny story. I am an avid Ultimate Frisbee player, and I was at a tournament in Santa Cruz, California. And one of my teammates was colorblind, and he borrowed my glasses, these surgical glasses I started wearing as sunglasses, because well, they protected your eye very well from UV radiation, but also they tended to make the world seem saturated and brighter. Colors just seemed to have a lot more vibrancy to it. And when he put the glasses on, he said something to the effect of, "Dude, I can see the cones." And what he was referring to is the fluorescent orange marker cones on the field. In fact, he did say, I said, "Well, what do they look like?" And he said, "They're almost fluorescent." And I said, "Oh, you can't tell them apart normally?" He said, "No, the grass and the cones are the same color." And that was the little aha moment, the light bulb over my head, where I started thinking, that is really interesting. So I had to pursue it, of course.
That's Dr. Donald McPherson, inventor of the Enchroma lenses, co-founder of the business that researches and markets them. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the science behind alleviating color blindness. So how do the glasses transform color for a person with color vision deficiency? What is the technology?
Embedded in the lenses, by the way, are very neutral. They just look like a gray pair of sunglasses. And they have about the same brightness as a pair of sunglasses. And that's why typically people use them as sunglasses. And embedded in that technology are very narrow filters that remove certain wavelengths of light. And the primary one to remove if you're color deficient is yellow. So we cut out a little bit of the yellow light. And what this does is it helps restore the normal response of the green and red photopigments, because they overlap too much in somebody who's color deficient. That is, they tend to respond to almost the same color spectrum. And by cutting out a little bit, we help push those response curves away from each other towards what is more typically a normal response curve of the cone. So by doing that, we allow the perception of color to be made by someone who's color deficient. And what you have to realize is these people have never seen certain colors. They have not been able to detect the difference in, but all the mechanisms at the cortical level are in place for that process to start working once the correct signal has been delivered to the brain.
And do the glasses work for everyone, or is there a level of color vision deficiency for which the glasses can't correct?
Well, there is. There's about one out of every five people with red-green color deficiency have a special form of red-green deficiency that's called dichromatic color vision. That is, they're missing one of their photopigments entirely. So we can't do anything about these people who are dichromatic. You know, of course, they're the ones who need it the most, but that's the way the science goes.
How do you know that a person wearing your glasses is really seeing the same thing that the rest of us understand is red or green if they've never seen it before?
There is so much response from people who are color deficient. They've gotten in touch with us by emails. They've sent us videos. It's just an overwhelming amount of information coming into us. And what we have to do to find out, to answer that question, is we have to sort of sort through what's being presented. So, for instance, if somebody exclaims that the trees are so green or the grass is so green or the stop sign is so red, we dismiss that. We're not saying that they're not seeing it, but because within the cultural framework, everybody knows that anything that has chlorophyll in it is green, we take that answer as a little suspect, just like everyone knows the stop sign is red. But what we're interested in is when somebody puts the glasses on and correctly identifies the shirt color that somebody's wearing, they say, is your shirt purple? Is your shirt green? And then without the glasses, it looks blue and brown or blue and tan. That is a good indicator that they're seeing the correct colors. And this extends to a whole range of things, correctly identifying the color of balloons. There's no assigned color for a balloon. So we have some evidence, but we're not stopping there. We're doing a lot of active research in the laboratory to demonstrate that indeed people are seeing the correct color. It's tricky, but we're closing in on a definitive answer in that regard.
And some of this has to do with the after image that we're used to seeing. If we mm-hmm. stare at one color and then close our eyes, we see that same shape in the reverse color.
Yeah, I got curious about that because I started thinking one day, well, what is if I stare at something that's bright green for a minute and then I look at a white sheet of paper, I see magenta. And I thought, well, what does a color deficient person see? And I did a bunch of reading and I didn't find much in the way of an answer, so I started testing people in my laboratory, and I found that they don't see the correct negative after image after fixating on a color. They can't name the color, and they can't name the after image correctly. So, for instance, if shown a bright red color, say a circle 6 inches diameter, and they stare at it, and I say, well, what color is it? Now, this is without the glasses. And they say it's brown. And then looking at the negative after image, they describe it as white or pale aqua. Now, if they retake that test and they put the glasses on, they correctly identify the adapting color as being bright red. And then after 60 seconds, I say, take the glasses off, and they stare at a white piece of paper, and they describe it as being bright blue. Well, that's the correct color name, because if you stare at bright red, your negative after image will be a bright blue. It's the opposite. So that's really curious because they're not wearing the glasses when they identify the second color. And this implies that it could only be happening at a cortical level. And you could further suggest that if that's the case, then they are seeing the correct color in the first place, because obviously they're activating some neural mechanisms that allow them to see the correct after image.
In other words, that vision is happening in their brain the way it happens in the brains of people with normal color vision.
That's right, Sheila. There's nothing wrong with the way that they potentially could process color information. It's just that those mechanisms have more or less lain dormant for their entire life, and they haven't had the correct input to allow them to perceive the color. Like, the whole area of conscious perception of color is just fascinating. And it's tricky to tease out answers, and that's why I started looking at the negative after image.
Well, I also want to ask you about how this all relates to children. Color deficiency can go undetected for years, and only a few states, and Maryland is not one of them, only a few states require that children be tested. What's the fallout from that?
I think it's huge. In fact, I think it should be the mission statement of NCHROMA that we correct this injustice to children who are color deficient. We all know, we can remember, when you're a child, you are not a self-advocate. You don't stand up and say, I can't tell what you're writing on the board because you're using colored pens and I can't see it. And you're right. Only 11 states test. And even those states don't do much with the information because there's really not much to do. They've done studies in which they've shown that in the case of color deficient children, there's sort of a negative feedback loop from the teacher because the child tends to not respond well to color-coded information that the teacher will make an assumption sometimes that the child is maybe not very intelligent. So instead of focusing more attention on the child, even less is given to the child. We believe that there's a way to get corrective lenses to all of these children that will be in an unobtrusive way. So we've focused on developing a contact lens version of our product, which we will be launching in 2018. If you think about it, it's like 80% of information is visual, and a huge amount of that is color-coded. And I've heard so many horror stories from adults relating to me, their inability to follow what information was being given in class, and just not feeling comfortable with the learning environment.
But why do you see contact lenses as the answer for kids?
They're probably the best delivery system. They're the closest to the eye. There's many advantages, one of which is we have an indoor version of our product, which is a very, very pale gray pink color. And the contact lenses, when you wear something that color over your eye, you don't even notice that you're wearing anything. So we feel like it would be the least obtrusive way to introduce a corrective lens into the classroom.
Will insurance cover it?
We certainly hope so. That would be nice.
Well, I appreciate your explaining the science to us. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Dr. Donald McPherson, glass scientist and creator of Enchroma Glasses, which can improve color blindness. We have a link to information about Enchroma Glasses at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. After the break, producer Melissa Gear visits Jonathan Scott Fuqua, a commercial artist who is colorblind. She captured what happened when he put on Enchroma Glasses for the first time. I'm Sheila Cass. That's coming up. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about new technology designed to correct color blindness. Dr. Donald McPherson, glass scientist and creator of Enchroma Glasses, explained how they work. We first learned about the glasses a few weeks ago when colorblind illustrator and art educator Jonathan Scott Fuqua, founder of the Baltimore Academy of Illustration, told us he'd gotten a pair but had not yet tried them on. Producer Melissa Gear said, "I want to be there for that." And she was.
We get to see what they look like for the first time.
Are you ready to put these on?
I'm almost trembling.
Yeah, I can see that.
I've sat up at night wondering, am I actually going to like the art I've produced before? Am I going to be shocked by how garish it is? Or it looks like the lenses are a color, but I don't know what color they are. I couldn't tell you unless I was wearing the glasses, maybe.
They look like sunglasses to me. I mean, the shade of the lenses look like sunglasses, and the shape of them kind of remind me of the Verizon guy glasses, but who's now the Sprint guy.
Right. They kind of look like Wayfarers almost.
Yeah, Wayfarers, yes. Much, much cooler, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to slide them on, okay? So here we go. It's amazing. And I mean, there's so many little things that are so incredibly different looking.
You're looking at the colored dots now of the packaging.
You know, I'm not looking at the colored dots. I'm looking at the table. The table is incredibly saturated with color.
And we're looking around your dining room, so you've been in here a million times. Tell me what else you're seeing.
Well, the red on the chicken. My daughter brought me back a papier-mâché chicken from Costa Rica just a few weeks ago. And it's actually bright red around the neck of the chicken, which I never noticed before.
Do you remember what you thought it looked like before?
Red totally disappears for me. It's just a very ugly, muddy, earthen color. And so that's vibrant. It's really got a life to it. It's amazing. Every color has shifted a little bit. The reds really jump out to me, but I can see colors that stop my eye, and color never stops my eye. I never go, wow, look at that color. It just doesn't happen that way for me.
Do you know that you have red hair, right?
People have told me I have red hair, but I mean, I've never been able to see my hair.
So there's a mirror on the wall right behind us. Do you want to take a little walk over there?
Is it really red though? I mean, can you see the red in my hair? A normal person could see the red in my hair?
Yeah, I consider myself a pretty normal person. I mean, as far as sight is concerned.
Normally visioned.
Yeah, and I mean, if I bumped into on the street and was introduced to you, I would be thinking, wow, yeah, he has red hair and a red beard. I mean, you've got some gray in it too, right. You know, but no, you have red hair and red beard. So let's just take a, if that's okay, do you mind?
Gosh, no, I just never, yeah, I can see my red hair right here. I can see kind of golden colored hair right on the sides of my head. I've always thought that I had brown hair. Everyone always tells me it's red, but it's never, I've never seen it as red. It's really odd.
You have some of your artwork that we were going to look at?
I'm so curious about the artwork.
So this is a big portfolio of your work from how long ago?
Probably the last 3 or 4 years. Some of it's black and white, but a good portion of it is very bright, I can see. Wow.
Describe what this is a painting of.
This is a painting from my book, Calvert the Raven and the Battle of Baltimore. It's a children's book. And I did a bunch of illustrations of a boy riding on a raven through the Battle of Baltimore. They're watercolor paintings. And I know I saturate color a lot, but I really can't typically see a lot of what I put down. I can see the hots and the colds. And what I mean by that is, if a hot color, there are colors in the hot spectrum like yellow and reds and orange. And if I add a hot color to certain other colors, I can see it warm up and it begins to fall or come forward for me. But I really can't see the color itself that well. I can see the tonality of the pieces, but I can't see the saturated colors. So when I look at this now, the blues stayed the same. But the red on the shirt is so vibrant. It's unbelievable. And the red behind his head, the kind of orangey red with a little kind of pinky yellow in it, I would never see that kind of clarity.
When you painted this, did you say, oh, he's going to be riding a black raven, I'm going to put him in a red shirt? What made you use that color?
Well, it's funny. I don't see red well. I know other people do. So when I apply the color, I just figure I'm not applying it for me. I'm applying it for other people. So I want to get a color that's on a different color spectrum than, say, the primary color around him. So the raven being very dark and bluish will work very well next to the hotter shirt. That's what I know intellectually, but I don't see it until this moment when I pulled it out and I see that shirt is so vibrant. It's really neat to see because it adds a dimension to it that I've always missed.
How did it show up that you had a color deficit problem?
It started in kindergarten. I just couldn't see the same things that other kids could. You know, they put very colorful pieces of construction paper on the board and say, point out the red, point out the green, and I never could do it. It kind of exposed itself when we were out on the water in boats or anything like that. I grew up near the James River and we'd be out on the water and my father would say, aim the boat towards the green marker. Well, I knew what green was supposed to look like, but I could never find it on the water. I just couldn't see it. Red became kind of a similar issue. So after a while, they just decided that I had to be checked for it.
And when you say you know what green was supposed to look like, but you couldn't find it on the water, what does that mean?
When you're colorblind, it's almost an impossible situation to explain because I can see green, but I can't see all shades of green, and I can't see it very well. It's kind of a muted color for me.
It's primarily red-green that the colorblindness is.
It's every shade of red-green, really. So purple would be a very difficult color for me to see. Pink often turns white. Green lights, they're just a figure of speech to me because they look white. When I drive my car at night, I don't see green lights at all. I see white lights. And I have a hard time in cities that post the stoplights on the side of the road because they're not hanging in the center of the street and I can no longer see them as green lights. I see them as street lamps.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's one thing to talk about aesthetic. It's another thing to talk about safety. This is going to be so interesting for your students.
I think I've always worried about that. I've always worried that they'll think somehow I'm handicapped when it comes to color. And I've never felt handicapped. I've always just been worried. If that makes any difference, I've just been worried that that maybe I'm not putting the right color in the right place. I also arrange my palette so that I know where the greens and the reds are. I always have to do that. The greens and the reds have to be in the same specific place or I get kind of messed up. And in fact, I teach that to students as well. It expedites the process of painting so that you almost intuitively know where to stick your brush. So it seems very odd that you could paint with green when you can't see green, but it's just painting with a tonality. It's not painting with a color. That's how I've gotten away with this idea that I can't see color that well. If you use it correctly, if you apply the paint right, you can say what you want to say using almost any color in the palette. And so if you look at my stuff, you'll think, gosh, he really knows his colors. But it's not that. It's that I know how to apply the colors. And that's why I teach. I really do know how to apply colors, but I don't see the colors until now, which is incredible.
That was colorblind illustrator and art educator Jonathan Scott Fuqua wearing Enchroma eyeglasses that correct color deficiency for the first time. Earlier, we spoke with Dr. Donald McPherson, the glass scientist who invented the technology behind the glasses. You can see Scott wearing the glasses as well as some of his artwork at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening to On the Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.